Well, Rachel is stunning.
You know what? Oh, yeah. It's so nice to have positive vibes on the podcast because your son doesn't give me confidence.
Well, you know, I watch you guys. I see him. That's what he does. That's what he does to people who he actually loves, though.
Mm-hmm. Who he actually loves. Tell me all the secrets. Tell me all the secrets.
I'm getting ready to give you some real tips, though. What you really need to know is, like, people he's absolutely crazy about, he respects and he really likes and he appreciates their talent. That's what he does. So I don't know why. We would prefer to be kissed and hugged and cuddled, but he doesn't do that. He like plucking the side of your head or saying little things to you like, not so great. You know, you've done an excellent job and you know you have. And he's like, well, you know, you need a little improvement going there. You know, you could do that, you know,
right.
But he loves you. Absolutely.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
I love the insight.
Wait, so Thought Warriors, what you're hearing right now is the voice of, look at her drinking. The voice of...
I've earned the right to drink.
You have
yes, you
earned
have.
The right to drink. Of the other it. Part of me, my soulmate. Actually not my soulmate, my soul creator. I don't have the adjectives to discuss.
I can easily be your soulmate.
Okay. You can be this
is
my mom.
I can easily be your soulmate because your soulmate is not necessarily somebody you're in love with. It's
right.
A person who you love and respect. I can be your soulmate.
Right. Okay. So there it is. I can't get through the intro. It's Crystal Ellis. My mother is joining us today. Parents Day here. On Higher Learning. Everybody clap for my mama. Woo! Right now, mom.
Thank you, guys.
Mom, first of all, mama, what you drinking on?
This is a little Cavassier.
Cavassier.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little cognac.
So why are we drinking?
Because I want to. And I can. I'm 65 years old.
Yes, you can. And you even have it in the proper glass. Yeah. Like she's sipping. You're a whole mood right now.
You know, my whole thing. I can do right. that.
So
you know I can.
I know that you can. I know that you can. Look, don't look, mama. I want there's a lot of stuff we can talk about, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure Rachel has a lot of questions that have to do with me and stuff like that. It is Parents Day. We're celebrating the
holidays. That's all I want. That's all I ask for.
You want that real, don't
Mom,
you?
Mom, that's all I want. Yes.
But before we do it, can you please tell the story of you and Keith Knighton with the etching pencil when you got to Glasgow Middle School. Yes. This is going to give you guys an example of where I come from and how I look at the world and how long we've been going through some of the things we've been going through
as
Black people. Mom, tell everybody what happened to you when you got transferred
First
to Glasgow
day.
Middle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. First of all, let me explain this. None of us Black kids wanted to go. So everybody who thought integration was a big thing and that we all wanted to run there and go to school, we absolutely did not because we left teachers who treated us like mothers and loved us. But just so happens, the first day I was going to Glasgow and I got off the bus. I was always a lingerer because I didn't kind of chill with groups too much. So I lingered, got off the bus, and the duty teacher was standing up against the pole. And this big, tall monster of a white guy, he was huge, you know. To me, I mean, I was only like, you know, I was like 5'2" or 5'3". I was running tracks. I was like 100 and some pounds, right? So he turned around when I got off the bus and he said something. He said, nigger, you know, said, we can't find your way, nigger. And when he said nigger, I just kind of looked at him and I said, your mammy is a nigger. That's the nigger. I did. I didn't know what else to say but that, you know, right. That's who the nigger is, you know, a piece of dried up shit who does not know how to act with people because that's what a nigga is. And so he took me, he turned around and he took his fist. He punched me in my eye. He actually assaulted me in such a way that after he punched me in my eye, I ran and I jumped on his back and he flipped me over his back and he took his foot and he stomped me in my stomach. And the duty teacher was standing up against the pole smoking a cigarette. It's just this little girl, right, from South Baton Rouge. And he was huge. So my eye was messed up and I was hurting. And when I went to my first hour class, it was art, right? And so he was standing at the table, you know, in the corner, and he did not see me walk in.
You happened to be in your first period art class.
He was right there, right there. That's because God will do things for you, amen. Mm-hmm. And he was standing there, and I looked at him, and I saw etching pencil. And I
tell people what the etching pencil is.
An etching pencil, tell him.
So the etching pencil is the pencil. It's like the pencil on one side, right? But then on the other side, it's got the little spike thing, like the little metal thing, right? You guys have seen this. You use it to make a circle or whatever. It's called compass etching pencil or whatever.
Yeah. Right?
So that was one of those.
So I saw him and I grabbed the etching pencil and I walked up behind him and I just like stabbed him three quick times. And he screamed. He screamed like a little whining baby. I'm like, what kind of punk are you? You know, you have just
you stabbed him in the back with an etching pencil.
Three quick times.
Yeah. Three quick. Yeah. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm.
And I did. And so what happened was the children of the class ran to get the principal or the assistant principal. But in the meantime, here comes the teacher and she faints. Of course, that's what the white ladies was doing back then. She faints, right, which made it all the worse. And blood was spewing out of him everywhere. And he was screaming. And I was standing there looking at him like, hell are you screaming for? Why are you? I really, and going through my mind, I'm like, you have just beat me unmercifully. And right. You're standing here screaming because I stabbed you in the back. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand it. Right?
Okay.
Why are you?
It's, I mean, I understand.
Wait, he was the guard or he was a student?
He was a student, just like me.
And this is the first day?
First day. So, but let me tell you how things happened. So, of course, I walked from Glasgow, which was, it was almost like, I would say 4 miles. So I walked from Glasgow to our house, right? To the home where we lived. Mm-hmm. By the time I got there, my dad was coming to home because he was working at the post office. So he got home. I walked in. He looked at before I tell you that, the assistant principal took my hand and put it behind my back and he twisted it up and dislocated it and put his foot in my back and pushed me off campus. So that's where I was. That's where us little black kids, that's what we had to experience with no counseling, nobody to defend us really except our parents. So my dad gets me in the car. We go back to the school. Of course, the assistant principal coward locked himself in the office, wouldn't come out. You know what's going to happen.
Right.
And then I get expelled. So there was one girl, I'm not going to call her full name because I've checked on all these people are still alive. Steve is still here. But anyway, there was one girl, it's a white girl, and she witnessed. She said, no, this is what happened. She hurt her, right? He stabbed her. So I ended up...
No, he beat her up. Not you stabbed him, but she vouched for
yeah,
you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I stabbed him, but she witnessed to the stabbing. She was ridiculed the entire school year. Like, when I said she was treated like shit, she was. The teachers, kids, white kids, like they hated her because she took up for me. Oh, the only thing happened to Steve was that they put him out of school and then sent him to another school district so he could finish. What happened to me was I ended up at the school board. My parents had to go to the school board. We have to have a trial. They had to say that, you know, I had to have a witness that said what he did to me. But that's what happened the first day. Mm. We didn't want to be integrated.
You didn't want to be integrated. Interesting.
Did not
Why?
Want to be integrated.
For reasons like this.
Mm.
What grade?
Seventh grade. Mm. We didn't want to be integrated. Why? I'm going to tell you why. Because they took us from teachers who were like us, who had an interest in us, and who loved us, and sent us to teachers who hated us. You know how it feels to be sitting in the assembly, and guys are getting bricks and putting them in socks and swinging them? And just throwing them on your side and busting you in the head. And when we start doing it back, the principal said, I don't care, whatever direction comes, I'm going to expel the whole area.
Where'd they get the bricks from, though? Who's bringing bricks to an assembly? Was they like handing out bricks like before y'all walked in there? Like, where was the bricks coming
from? No, the white kids were doing it. We brought ours, our own. You know, we had ours in our purses and our backpacks on the bus because we gotten tired of it.
So what you're telling me, you're telling me is before school, y'all would like round up bricks.
I mean, we started doing it when they did it.
So it's a savage time we're living in because I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying, think about that. It's going, y'all having an assembly. Maybe the assembly is to go over new cafeteria rules or something like that. And y'all know that the assembly is Tuesday. So what y'all do is y'all bring bricks to school to throw at each other. This is a Mississippi Burning type.
Defending themselves.
That was not something that we as black students invented.
Right.
We learned to come to assemblies and duck. I mean, seriously, they would bring.
That's crazy.
What fun.
Wait a minute. We learned to duck. Oh, shit. Oh, excuse
I'm
me,
not,
mama.
I'm like, not.
Wait.
I don't believe this one.
So let me ask you a question, mama, real quick. How many times did somebody have to get hit in the head before y'all learned to duck? Y'all didn't learn to duck the first time. It's coming. Oh, it's just a brick. But then after, how many times did somebody have to hit before
we
y'all
really didn't
said,
think it was going to be, it didn't, we did not think as students that that would keep up. You know, I could say by that for maybe the fifth assembly.
Five assemblies. Wait a minute.
Because Van is getting the visual right now. It was because you said they were slinging.
Wait. Five assemblies of bricks, all right? And on a sixth assembly, so they go together. It's like, listen.
Okay.
On the real, y'all need to, this assembly, we're going to try something different. When they throw the bricks, we're going to get out the way.
Van.
Rachel, please don't laugh. I'm
laughing because I'm uncomfortable. Listen, let's start with that. Because listen, that's why I feel like he's deflecting because he knows. So let's start from the beginning. I even put this on social media. I said thought warriors. That's what we call our listeners. Is there something, I didn't say that you were going to be on the podcast, but I'm like, is there a question you want to ask Van's mom? There's anything you could ask. I got a lot of questions. I mean, answers.
Wow.
So a lot of people want to know. And the main thing people want to know is what Van was like growing up. Van is an excellent storyteller. Excellent. But I know you can tell better stories. And when I say stories, I would like the embarrassing ones, the funny ones, the ones that he has will not tell. I could only get from you. So what was he like? I wish
quick.
I had my cognac with me.
Okay. I'll tell you one like quick. Okay, so man loved Superman. Mm-hmm. Loved him. The little boy. Superman came out, fascinated him. Like he was fascinated. He loved Superman. So if you notice him, if you get up on him close, there's a little dent right here in the middle of his forehead.
Lean into the camera, Van.
Lean in, Van.
Okay. You see it? Yes, I do.
So Van almost caused me a heart attack because for some reason, Van decided that he was going to get on the steps at the house up on the top part, and he wanted to practice being invisible. So he took...
No! We have a story about this.
That's what he did.
Okay, Van, remember what you said about me.
He was going to use his invisible Superman ability, right?
No, it was X-ray vision.
X-ray vision, that's right. X-ray vision. So, mm-hmm. Van puts the cape over his head. And for some reason, Van leaked. And when Van leaked, Van hit that concrete pillar and blood just shot everywhere. Because it's still a little mark, the little dip is still up in there. Yeah, it was like all the way down to like the little yellow meat, right?
Oof.
And he, the thing about it, so he jumped back up. He jumped back up like nothing happened. And me and Miss Alexander was literally having a fit. That's one.
Losing it.
losing.
Did you think that they couldn't see? Were you? Did you think you were still invisible? I'm. He made fun of me. I want you to know, Mom. He made fun of me because I said if I could have any superpower, I would want to be invisible, and he said that was weird. Now here we are, and I'm learning. You've been wanting to be invisible since back in the day.
She was losing it. I looked in my mom's eyes, and by the way, I think I'm only like 3 or 4 at this time. I'm very young, so maybe a little older. But like I looked at my mom's eyes, and I remember seeing her shiver, seeing her body tremble, and they took me to the hospital. I don't remember what happened when I got to the hospital, but I do remember this. How did the stitches come out? Do you remember this, Mom?
No.
You were combing my hair one time? Like, you're talking about stuff that maybe people need to investigate. Like, you were combing my hair one time. One time you were combing my hair and you looked and you were like, is it time for those to come out? And I can't remember who was around. Maybe Kim was there. And they were like, Crystal, what you doing? And you started picking at the stitches with the comb. You started picking
at the sacrifices the mother will make for her children.
I never forget this. You started picking at this. All of a sudden, you started taking the stitches out.
Well, they were ready to come out.
Didn't go to the hospital to get the stitches out. You started taking the stitches out. And then I remember under the stitches, there was like a when they come out, it didn't hurt. It was just, but there was dead skin and coming off like that. Scab. I can remember. Scab. And then like I saw the little white part. And then that scar right there it's harder to see now, but that scar has never left from when
Don't blame that on Mom. You the one who covered yourself up with the cape and took a leap.
It was going to be a scar no matter what. Look, first of all, here's the thing that you guys don't have to understand. You guys are looking at this in hindsight. The reality is, what if I would have discovered that I had X-ray vision?
Okay.
Then what?
No.
Then what?
The reality
then what?
Is...
Then what? I believed in myself. So I believed in myself. I believed that I could see through, by the way, through a towel is what I put over my head.
Exactly.
I believed that I could see through the towel.
A curtain, where you might have been able to see a little bit something through a towel.
Right.
See, I'm like, what the... I can't even tell you how shocked I was.
Do you remember what Dad said?
Huh?
Do you remember what Dad said?
No, I don't.
Said something wrong with that boy.
Well.
Did.
Well.
What else would you like to know?
Oh, is Van a mama's boy?
Okay, so I'm going to say that he loves me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that he gives me the respect that I've earned from him, right? And I'm going to say that for the most part, I believe. But he's not so much a mama's boy that he allows me to interfere with decisions he makes.
Okay. That's good. That's actually the best way to be.
Yeah. Actually, I don't do that with my kids.
She doesn't.
I don't get involved.
She doesn't. See, here's the thing. Mom, I'm going to ask you a question. Might be a little bit of a tough question. Okay.
You know I'm going to answer it the way I see it. So you guys better watch what you ask me.
Okay. So this is a tough question. So I don't know anyone in my life. I don't know anyone in life who feels for other people like you do, who feels the pain of other people. I still remember being in that KFC in Hawthorne. Do you remember this? We're in the KFC in Hawthorne, and there's a guy in the KFC, and the guy looks like he's a little destitute, looks like he's maybe homeless, right? Or whatever.
Yeah.
Mom walks over to the guy and tries to give the guy money so he can get something to eat. And then the dude takes out a wad of money.
A wad.
And goes, a wad of money. Don't worry, baby, I got plenty. That man must have just been coming from work. Like he had a wad of money.
You know?
But Mom just can't get over, she just feels so deeply for everyone. And her children, it's like on 10. It's like on 10, when we go through something, she goes through it worse than what we go through it. Do you in any way feel like you've devoted too much of your life, your feeling, your energy to the people around you, and that you haven't in any way taken enough for yourself?
You want an honest answer? The honest answer would be absolutely. And the reason I'm saying that is because we were raised in our generation to give everything to everybody else, to be sure that everybody else was taken care of but us, because we were not considered something to be taken care of during our era. It was my job was to be sure that your dad had his breakfast and his clothes done, and that you and Ebony had the clothes you needed and the food you needed and home cooked meals, you know, and stuff like that. It was, you know, and the way I was working, you knew I was almost hitting 12 hours a day when I was doing a loan officer, and then coming home cooking four meals and then trying to clean up. So if I'm going to answer you honestly, I'm going to say, yes, not that my love for anybody is decreased by what I said to you, but the idea that I realized here at 65 years old that there's so many things that you guys were strong enough to handle that I over-nurtured you about, like just being that person who had to be there and huddle a little bit. So I would say yes, and then I would say no. So I'm kind of in the middle on that one. There is nothing I wouldn't do for you. You know, there's no place I wouldn't go for you guys. But I should have known myself a little bit better, because after your father and I divorced, I had no idea who I was actually when I wasn't able to get up, even after our relationship, how it ended. I didn't have the ability to get up and truly make a decision. You know, you and Ebony, I was happy because you guys were grown. You were going down your own path. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what do you think? Do you think that I gave too much to you guys instead of giving more to myself?
Yeah. And I the only reason why, you know, I feel that way, number one, like what you just said, you talked about what sisters go through, you know? And for me, of course I do. Of course I do. But at that time, I got to be honest with you, I couldn't see it. The only thing I could see was that if you needed something, you went to mama. And now me being 40 years old, I couldn't see what, when people need peace and quiet, when people need you to help them by helping yourself, when people need that, like I couldn't see any of that. Only thing I could see then was that if I needed something, or if something had to happen, then there was one person I knew that I could count on. And because of that, you know, I probably went back to the well a little bit too much. And I'm happy now that you are a successful writer and a successful business owner, and that you have come to know yourself. And that makes me happier. Actually makes me happier, honestly, than anything.
Yeah.
That's actually, you know, been able to happen for me. And I since we're here, I am very, like, very proud of you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Don't make me start crying because you not got on mascara. Now, no.
All of us. No, I love that you had that moment, Van, because what I was going to ask your mom is, what is she most proud of you? But I, and you definitely, Mom, I would love for you to answer. But I love that you took the moment to say what you're proud of her for. And I see where you get so much of you from, too.
Yeah, it's all.
What I'm most proud of, Van, he's his own person, right? And he has created a world for himself, you know, outside of what, where he came from.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a shabby, you know, upbringing, but he created a world for himself, right? So he came out here, went to LA by himself, right? He jumped off, and I remember Capricorn. Mm,
yeah, remember that?
I remember Capricorn. You know, right. He got in there, and he worked his way in there. And there was nothing that somebody could ask him to do that he didn't just go ahead and say, "Okay, let me do this." Right? You know,
mm-hmm.
let me learn this. I'm going to do this because this is knowledge. You know, it was like he humbled himself when he came out here. He learned a lot of lessons too, right? Mm-hmm. But he didn't stop, right? He did not stop, right? And that's one of the things that I admire about him. And also that his heart, he does have a loving nature, right? He kids a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He gets frustrated quickly, you know. But his heart, hottest, like biggest Texas, right? So when I look at my son and I see him, he's amazing to me because I look at somebody who actually struggled and strived to get where they got. And then he had the love of other people. He actually melted into the hearts of others, right? And I could see that by looking at the posts when people came behind him, and you know, and the things that people would say. You know, you see the negative stuff, but you know, there's a thing you can do for that. But that's what I love most about him. He tries to embrace, and he helps. I tell you, he loves you. He wants others around him. He's just not the guy who says, let's try to do it. He wants to see everybody around him successful.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably maybe because he doesn't want them borrowing money from him, but I don't know.
Or to bring him down.
Yeah. Right. You know, he wants to see everybody successful. So that part of him and his character, his nature, it's just loving nature. It really showed up, you know, when he went to the thing with that 30 miles on people. But it really showed up because it showed up because it showed that he's a man who says, you're not going to break me. No matter mm-hmm. what the system does, you're not going to break me, you know. And if I have to take some time and go in, still not going to break me. Because he expresses unconditional love. He got that from me. That's the only way I made it. I had to embrace love. So I love that my son loves the way he does. And I love that my son encourages, right, everybody around him. He loves him. But he picks on some people a lot.
Mm. I like Van so much more after talking to you.
Really?
Yeah, I really do. Yeah, I'm a fan now.
He's the best salesman. So people have asked this about you because I mentioned it on the other podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Way down in the hole. I talked about some of the hoodoo that you've been accused. There's been accusations coming from my father's side of the family that you and Mamo, is Mamo there?
Is Mom!
That you and Mamo.
And telling people on national television, on this big old podcast, that we're hoodoos. Come here, Mom.
I'm not saying that you guys are hoodooers. I'm not saying that you guys are hoodooers.
Come here, Mom.
I'm saying that there's been some talk that there's some hoodoo stuff that's happened, that there's different practices that you, if you look in the back there, you know, this is my grandmother.
Look in the back.
Hey, Mama.
Hi, Mama. Hi.
Hey, Mama. This is my
Lay down some, Mama.
This is my grandmother right here. Hey, Mama. How are you doing, Mama?
Beautiful. Oh, so beautiful. Beautiful.
This is my grandmother. Mama, is it true or not true that you guys are hoodooers, the two of
no,
you.
No, no.
No.
That's the wrong terminology. We are earth mothers.
I love that.
Earth mothers. That's what we are.
Earth mothers. And what
and
is
natural healers.
Thank you.
Earth mothers and natural healers.
I'm a universal spiritualist.
Okay, mm-hmm. I need to come home. So I need to get down there.
So
you do.
Wait. So I
come
ask you a question.
Here and let us embrace your feminine divine energy of everything that we are. Because you know what? I'm going to tell you another reason why men attack us.
Why would he say voodoo?
I don't know why.
Because I'll tell you why. Can I tell you why real quick?
Because they know of our power.
No, I'm not attacking.
We've always been the more powerful.
Wait, I'm not attacking. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why. Because one time, I was at the house, and Dad was in the house, and Dad walked out of the house, and he saw some broken eggs down. He saw some broken eggs in like front of the house and like near where the little garden thing was, some kind of thing. And it was like early in the morning, like 6:30, 6:45. You had just left early in the morning. And Dad said, Van! And so that's what you remember how he used to call me. And he calls me in there. And I hear his truck running, right? And the truck is running. And he goes and he says, I want you to come here. I want you to see something right now. I want you to see something. And I'm like, okay, Dad, like, what's going on? Like, it's early. It's early in the morning. And he goes, son, I know I can't never talk to you because you don't want to believe nothing about your mama. You don't want to believe nothing about your mama. But I'm going to tell you something right now, boy. Come here. Look at this. He said, your mama and your mamo, they some hoodooers. And they putting a hoodoo spell on your daddy. They're putting a hoodoo spell on me. I'm telling you, if my tires bust out or if something happened to my boots, I don't know why. I'm telling you right now, it's because your mama and your mama are some hoodooers. And I thought, you know, we've never really talked about whether or not you and mama are, in fact, hoodooers. Okay. We've never had this discussion before. So I decided, while everybody's listening, I'd ask you, two beautiful women.
We're going to have to tell him something. First of all, from my experience in religion, mm-hmm. and I have been, I'm a Baptist preacher's granddaughter, deep in the church. Okay. You know, doing everything that I thought was right. Okay. So I was raised in the church. You were raised in the church, right? Sure. But we were raised based on our environmental conditioning. Okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I learned by discovery and research and listening to that inner voice that I'm sorry to tell you that one way is not the only way for anybody to get anywhere. Because if that was the truth, then we're going to say 3/4 of the other world. The world is going to go, I'm a universal spiritualist, which means every aspect of my ancestors, what they did, I'm talking all my ancestors. I'm even talking about the white ancestry. Them Wiccans be working on something. We have white ancestry in us. Come on, let's be real. If we're going to go ancestry. So I found out that all of this plays a part in the natural frequency of the universe.
Okay.
And when you, I see you laughing, Anthony. So when you start talking witchery or hoodoo to me, first of all, I give respect to the Voodoo-mas because that's a religion and a faith.
Yes.
You can look at me like you want some. Like, shit out you when you get home.
Okay. I'm definitely coming home.
When you do that, when you come at it like that, for one thing, you disrespect a lot of people. Your grandmother on your father's side,
and your grandmother and on your mother's side.
But let me tell you about your grandmother on your father's side.
Oh, I know.
That
I know.
Lady right there.
See?
And your Uncle Gil Bishop G.T. Latham did some dark and unruly shit to people. Okay. Now, I'm going to say that.
Right.
So you can say whatever you want. I was scared of your grandmother on your daddy's side a little bit because she did some raw shit to people, you know?
Yeah.
You can't say anything. You were terrified of it too. Remember when you
I was terrified. Oh, I was terrified.
Remember
and I still know. I still know. I saw a lion. I promise. When I was a kid.
He did.
And my grandma, rest in peace, my mom. When I was a kid, yeah. I walked in that room and I saw a lion with wings.
Yeah.
I promise you. I saw a lion with wings.
Terrified.
It was a miniature one. A little lion with wings flying around. It's a true story. See, we get into some real South Louisiana shit.
I actually don't doubt you. I don't. You know I have family in Louisiana. I don't doubt you.
I saw a lion with wings.
You work here, like if my band's talking about my room, but everything in my room is about a frequency of unconditional love. I mean, I would like to know what could you say about me as a universal spiritualist?
Nothing.
You're talking about hoodoo and voodoo. Hoodoo, let's get it straight. Hoodoo. It's more or less alchemy where if somebody wanted your man or wanted your woman, you know, there's certain things that they would do to their food or what have you in order to draw them near, right?
Right.
Hoodooing you. I'm hoodooing you. I'm not saying nothing about a voodoo. Much respect. And I'm not saying I don't have, but look, y'all hoodoo is. Don't mess with me because I ain't scared of it. I just want to say this out in the universe, right? So we'll have an understanding. I'm not going there.
Mm-hmm.
Stop, Van, with the hoodoo. But sometimes the things we do may look like hoodoo.
Right. Right.
But it's not. I get you.
It's not. But it's not hoodoo. Right? Because
and
we all have respect for Jesus. Okay, and it's all so and Jesus and Jesus. And we all believe and worship Jesus, right?
We all believe in what?
Jesus Christ.
What about it?
Is it okay?
What about Yeshua?
Okay.
Don't start with me, but I think he was schooled.
Okay. No school. Because people are, right. School's
we
out.
We got to have a part two.
And I'm not saying at all that because my background is Christianity, okay? But guess what? I was from the side of Christianity where I was a kid sitting back there in the back. So I know what the deacons and my grandpa and them was doing. Don't make me go there. He was a love preacher. Everybody loved your grandfather. Loved him. But after he got out of church, raising that hand up, screaming at boss back saying, Jesus, he was in some ass.
Well, and the point of it is,
he was
they're
inside.
All men. And I mean, they're all men.
She
I'm
always
serious.
Takes up for those guys.
I take up for him because he's a good father-in-law to me, and I love him dearly. And he didn't do no more than the rest of those preachers did who had a swinging, you know what. They was all getting something.
So, Mamo, you think it's okay for preachers to go out and have a little bit of sex on the side is what you're
saying,
Mamo?
You know what? Yes. He can do it. All the rest of y'all do it.
All the rest of y'all.
All the rest of you do it. So why can't the preacher get him a little bit too?
Ain't no fun unless we all get some. You're right.
Right. All right.
Listen, you ladies, I love the two of you guys so much.
I love you.
I love y'all so much. And I hope that people got a little bit of a taste of the amazing.
I can't wait till you get home, Van.
We got something for you.
So we can watch Perry Mason together.
Perry Mason. That's what me and my grandmother watch together. Perry Mason, Little Bill, sometimes some Matlock.
That's my show.
No, Little Bear.
Little Bear. Little Bear. The Little Bear. All right, y'all. We got to run. Mamo, Mama, I love you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
I love you, darling.
Love you too.
So nice to meet you both.
It was nice meeting you too, Rachel. You're absolutely adorable.
Thank you. You are beautiful. I can't wait to come home. I'm not playing.
To come here when you come home.
That's home. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm coming to y'all's place.
All right.
Oh, we're
going to make you some gumbo, girl.
Ooh, I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Gumbo with a side of hoodoo.
I don't care.
Okay.
Hoodoo me.
I love her.
Bye-bye, Mama.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. And that's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. So, for everybody who's just tuning in now, we got the Lindsays in the house. We got my mom, Kathy Lindsay, and the judge, Judge Lindsay, who is here via video if you're watching, which is a rare treat because, you know, if you follow me from Bachelor Nation, he is heard of but never seen. So this must be a big deal. Van, I'm shocked. I'm shocked. Should we just get into it?
Yeah, let's just get into it.
Van's got the question.
I have a question. So, first of all, I'm really happy that you guys were able to join us. Rachel, what do I need to know about Rachel? Me and Rachel are we have a good partnership. We have good chemistry. I pick on her a lot, right?
A lot.
I do pick on her a lot because she's already like a sister to me. But if somebody was going to meet Rachel, work with her, be a partner with her, what would they have to know about Rachel? What's like the most important thing to know about her?
Ladies first.
Oh, she's real. What you see, what you get. Yeah, she's. We've always tried to keep her grounded. She had the best of all the worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both worlds.
Yes, both worlds. So that's the main thing. What you see is what you get. She's for real.
Hmm. Dad,
I would say she is competitive. She takes strong stands. She believes in whatever she's fighting for. And as my wife said, she is for real. So literally, she does have the best of both worlds, although sometimes they did not understand why I had them in two worlds, why we had them in two worlds. But we told them they would be better individuals, they'd be more prepared in dealing with the world's issues.
That is, I have always appreciated both worlds. So for those listening, you don't get it. My mom grew up in Houston, Texas, inner city. South Park, to be exact, area. Well, Fifth Ward, let me get it right, and then South Park. My dad grew up on a farm, almost said Skid Row, Skidmore, and Skid... Beeville, Texas. So we got, you know, like the country life. We spend summers there. We spend some holidays there. And then with my mom's side, we got the inner city. But then my family's from Louisiana. Like Van is from Louisiana, but he's from Southern Louisiana. My mom's side comes from Northern Louisiana. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more on the countryside out there too. So we grew up a lot, you know, going to trail rides, family reunions. So we had a good mix. So that's what they mean. And I always appreciated that. I just would like to.
So
to
best,
add.
Best of both worlds. When you say a mix, you're talking about of the country life and of the more sort of inner city life. So that you understand the total experience. Why was that so important for you guys that she had both of those kind of different experiences?
Well, I would say this, first of all, it's not just country versus city. You know, at one point, she and her sisters complained about going to a school that was predominantly white. And I told her you need to know how to function in that world because they are the ones who run the country. At the same time, we want to make certain that you stay grounded in your roots. Know the other side. I always think blacks have the best of both worlds because most blacks know how to act when they're dealing with whites. Conversely, a lot of whites do not know how to act when they're dealing with blacks. And I mean, for example, I tell my colleagues sometimes, look, I have no problem going to speak to 1,000 people who are all white, but some of them would feel uneasy if they had to speak to 1,000 blacks and they were only white there. So you got the best of both worlds. And frankly speaking, if blacks were in the majority, they may have the same view that whites have now. But I think it's very important that you're able to function in both worlds. And also always remember from where you came.
That's right. That's why I didn't lose myself on The Bachelorette like they thought that I was going to.
What was it like for y'all when y'all saw that she was going on The Bachelorette? Seriously, your look at mom. Your little girl is going to go find love on the TV. What did y'all think when y'all heard that?
It was everything against what we had raised her to be.
Too many,
how do you find love within that short time with all those guys and all that kissing and, you know, how do you navigate through that? I did not see it.
But moreover, frankly speaking, I thought the show was pretty much scripted. she may dispute that, but the bottom line is, with any show, you got the producers saying you need to do this or that because they're always concerned about the ratings. All the big networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, CNN, all of them, they want their ratings to be up. So they do not invest in shows that they think are going to be failures. And so sometimes you have to put things in there that are exaggerated to get the attention of the audience. And frankly speaking, I think sometimes you see people on those shows, they're really not like that, but they have to act like that because it sells the ratings. It ups the ratings.
Now, did you ever see Rachel acting in a way on The Bachelorette that you didn't think she was really that way?
He didn't watch.
He didn't watch it.
He didn't watch it.
I saw a few excerpts, but I did not watch it because, I mean, to me, first of all, I just do not think those shows, what should I say?
Look at the disgusted look on his face.
Those shows, I guess what I'm saying is more, for the most part, a fantasy world. Sure, there are times when people, quote unquote, find love or find their mate, and that's fine. But a lot of times there's a lot of hype, and frankly speaking, on the parts that I've seen, the individuals know what to say. If they do not know what to say, the producers tell them, you need to say this, you need to do such and such and such. So that's why I used the term earlier. I think many times the shows are scripted. I mean, not like a regular show. For example, you got a show that's supposed to last an hour. There's so much time for commercials. The outcome is already known because that's the way a show's supposed to end. Mm-hmm. When I'm in trial, I tell folks on the jury, this is not like TV. You always know the outcome. I do not know what the jury's going to decide in this case. Will the defendant be guilty or not guilty? Will the plaintiff recover $5 million or get zero? It's real in my courtroom. And I do not know how they're going to rule. As the case progresses, I can pretty much see how the case is going as to whom should win or as to whom should lose.
Also, we're very private. We're very private. This is going to take put us in an area that we were totally uncomfortable with. And so that was my main concern.
I love to make y'all uncomfortable. You know that, though, right?
No.
I live for it.
Rach, listen, you're not making me uncomfortable because there's only so much that I'm going to reveal. The fact that I appeared on video, that doesn't mean you will not know the inner workings of my soul.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, as a kid, was Rachel rebellious or was she pretty, like, did she go along with the rules pretty much? She pretty much stayed within the lines.
Rachel was more mischievous, I would say, if I were going to use the term to describe her. I mean, not in a bad way, but she was, had a strong independent streak. Mm-hmm. In fact, several of my friends, when I was city attorney, they would say, sir, Rachel is a strong will. She's going to be independent. I said, that's fine. I want her to be independent because I want to be able to, you know, stand the ground on anything, hold her own in any situation. So we raised all of our daughters to be independent. We want them to be independent.
Mm-hmm. Mom?
Strong will. Like my husband said, I saw that at 3 weeks. I told my husband, no, this is going to be she's going to have a strong personality. So
you had a temper tantrum. three weeks old.
3 weeks. So, as my husband said,
I think I've calmed my temper down. There was a time my dad caught me. I punched one of the neighbors in the stomach.
I want to hear this story.
I think I told you what happened. You didn't see it.
No. I don't know. Well, I guess, to be honest with you, the little girl was nagging Rachel, and Rachel had enough. She turned around and hit her in the stomach, gut punched her. And when she gut punched her, the little girl literally sat down. That's all she could do.
What was she doing to you? Do you remember?
I have no idea. I really did have a bad temper. Basketball courts. I used to always get in fights.
She had answered her, and I guess that wasn't enough for the little girl. And she kept answering. Rachel turned around and hit her in the stomach, and literally.
Mm. And he loved it. I didn't even get in trouble.
The little girl sat down. I mean, when you, I stood up that's how myself. Hard she hit her. She sat down.
What did you guys expect Rachel to be doing with her life?
I don't like this question.
What did you guys expect her to be doing with her life? And is it anywhere near what she's doing right now?
Well, it doesn't surprise me that she's in the entertainment field, but I thought
wait,
she was
right. Why?
I suspected, though, I expected, that's the correct word, that she would practice law a little bit longer. I didn't think the transformation would come this quickly.
That is called disappointment.
That's not really a disappointment. It's just more of, instead of making an oblique turn, you took a hard left or a hard right. That's all.
I only know how to do it that way. And mommy, you were shaking your head vigorously when you said, no, this isn't what you expected me to be doing with my life.
I never saw that. Never thought. I saw sports. I saw you more as a journalistic sportscaster or something like that, because that's what you went to New York for. And you were in NFL? What were
NBA.
You
NBA.
NBA. NBA. Mm-hmm. Intern. So that's where I saw you.
Now, do you guys have any questions for me? Is there anything, I know that you guys listen to the podcast off and on. Is there anything you guys want to know from me?
Not so much no, but let me just say this. You know, I've listened to parts of the podcast, and I can tell that you are quite intelligent. You can think deep, but sometimes in the way you express yourself is not the best way to do it. I mean, for example, you, I don't know whether you're trying to do it for humor or for emphasis or what, but I would say there are too many curse words. And here's why that's important. As I stated before, I think you're intelligent, or what we used to say, my generation, you're hip. I guess what your generation would say, you woke, you know what's going on, you're aware, you know what's going on in the community, and that's good. Mm-hmm. But when you're delivering your message, I do not think it's necessary to use that profanity. Here's why. When you do that, it takes away from your message. It really does. I mean, for example, when you have an argument or a discussion with someone and someone resents the name calling, that requires no intellectual effort, no intellectual thinking. It simply shows that the person can only call names rather than to meet the opponent's argument with a cogent, intellectual response. So when you curse, it really adds nothing to your delivery. You're not being a comedian. Mm-hmm. Not on Richard Pryor. You're not, what's that group? I mean,
the Kings of Comedy.
Kings of Comedy. D.L. Hughley, Steve Harvey, Cedric the Entertainer, and who was the fourth one? Bernie Mac,
rest in peace.
You're not doing it for entertainment. So I really am having difficulty understanding what value does it add to the program.
Okay. Is it okay? Ms.
Lindsay? The F bomb. It's the F word. You love the F word.
I love the F word. Okay. That's a fair critique. Fair criticism. In my opinion, this is what I would say to that. What I would say is when you're doing a podcast, especially a podcast like this one that goes on an hour or 30 minutes or whatever, to me, it's always important for me to communicate with people in plain speak. In the way that I would talk to them if things were in sort of a less formal atmosphere. Meaning, this isn't really CNN, and this isn't a forum where I'm trying to be my best self. It's a forum where I'm trying to be my most authentic self. And unfortunately, when I am being my authentic self, I do happen to use some of those words. So I want people to leave the podcast getting a true sense of who I am. And that means I have to relax a little bit. So that's the answer that I would give. Mr. Lindsay has Judge Lindsay has absolutely zero tolerance for that answer. it made no, Judge no. Lindsay had zero. It went nowhere.
It's an answer that, frankly speaking, I reasonably expected you to make. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because I'm a judge and in the courtroom, I know what goes on in the real world. I knew what went on in the real world way before you did. So I'm not, it's not that. you know, as the Bible says, there's a time and place for everything. The question is, what's the time and place, or why is it necessary when you convey any message like that? I mean, for example, under the circumstances that you're describing, I'm trying to see what utility or what use does it bring to your podcast? How did it make you more marketable? How did it make you more acceptable? How does it increase the number of people who want to listen to you? Now, for example, if it's an emergency something, you may have to use those words to get somebody's attention. Mm. And that happens, you know, that's what police officers say all the time. When somebody's not complying with their instructions, they use those words to make the suspect or the person who's going to be arrested realize that, hey, we mean business. We want to get your attention. And the way to get your attention is to use those kinds of words. Now, there's a drawback to that. So this is a segue into something I wanted to say. The problem with that, and here's a good example. When police officers use profanity in dealing with the people they're about to arrest or they're questioning, that turns a lot of Black people off, and rightfully so. And here's why. They want to be talked to just like they were talked to white people. They do not talk to white people like that. Another thing I do not like police officers do, don't come up and say, hey, bro, to me. You don't know me at all. You would not tell a white person, hey, bro. So it's insulting for me when a white police officer comes up and says, hey, bro. And I've corrected them, too, about that. You call me sir like you call anyone else. The whole thing is we want to be treated equally, just like you treat the mass population. Why treat us differently? Because when you call us that or you say that, you've already made a decision in your mind. I'm talking about the police officer. Hey, I can treat this person differently. I do not have to give him or her the respect that I would give someone else. Many times, a confrontation between Blacks take place because police officers do not know how to approach a Black people. That's very agree. Important.
Yes, sir.
You know, the Bible talks about that, too, about a soft answer turns away anger, but grievous, harsh words stir up wrath. In other words, when a police officer snaps at a Black person or calls him or her something that's inappropriate, there's going to be a response. And then the conversation is escalated. And next thing you know, the police officer wants to arrest the Black person or the minority person for something that's really not even a crime, or something that he or she, the police officer, goads a person into doing. So words do have meaning. That little old saying about sticks and stones may break my bones, the words may never hurt me, that's a lie. Now, I understand why it was said, because older parents came up with it to make their children have a sense in how to deflect harmful statements made by other kids. Kids can be awfully mean. So he said, you say, hey, look, just say sticks and stones may break my bones, the words may never hurt me. The truth of the matter is, words do hate, do hurt. That's why we have laws against libel and slander. So words matter. Words definitely matter. And I just think there's a place and time for everything. And when something's overused, it becomes a liability. It diminishes the effectiveness of your message.
Okay, so there's a word that exists in the English language. And I think it's a word that's actually underutilized in the current times that we live in, with such, binary political sort of opinions. That word is compromise. So I'm going to attempt to reach a compromise with you, Judge Lindsay. What I'm going to attempt to do right now is I'm going to plea bargain this. I'm going to try to plea.
Oh, gosh, she's probably always been waiting for this moment.
You know, I've never been arrested, never been in court. I am fascinated with the way that the legal system works. You know what I mean? Probably the only man in my family that hasn't been arrested, but whatever. So can we...
And you said that without cussing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Can we get to a percentage decrease of curse words as an initial step? Because I'm going to be honest with you, cold turkey might be hard. But if I was to say that I would use 30% less curse words, would that in a way be a start to me coming around and maybe being a little bit more accepted by you, Judge Lindsay?
That would be a step in the right direction. I cannot quarrel with that because nobody changes usually overnight. I mean, you do things out of habit. In fact, you know, you do them so often and it just almost becomes second nature. So it's hard to remember to do that. You know, you kind of have to count to 10. I mean, I guess Rachel will allow me to say this. You have to have that willingness to want to change. You know, like, it was some years ago, I mentioned the word Oriental, and Rachel said, oh, Daddy, you can't say that.
Can't say
unless
it.
Unless you're talking about a rug mm-hmm. or a food.
A lamp. Yeah.
Okay. And so anyway, and she told me about that. And what I had to do was make a conscious effort because when I was growing up, that's what was used. And so anyway, it took really not that long, but every time I would say the word Asian or where the person was from. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I had one of my fellow judges a while back. He said, well, you know, Judge, that young Oriental law clerk you have working for you. And I politely said, Judge, I don't know if you know this, but I do not want you to be embarrassed or somebody to attack you or being critical of you. But Oriental is not the word to use when you're talking about a person. Use the term Asian, or if you know the country from where that person is or where the person's ancestors are from, use that word. And that way you'll never have to worry about anything. And here's what you'll be surprised. I was talking to one of our judges, and she has an Asian parent. And she told me with a straight face on one of these in a public forum that she did not know that the use of that word was offensive until I told her. So anyway, when you're used to something for so long, you have to make a concentrated effort that you want to do better. And that's with anything. You know, I tell people all along, they talk about being under the influence of drugs. And the reason they committed the crime is because they were under some drug. And I said, I understand that. But here's the real deal. Often I will require people to go and have drug treatment, whether it's counseling, whether it's coming in, whether it's taking medication. And some people will say it helps them, and other people say it will not help them. What I always tell them, you can have the best counselors, all the drug treatment in the world, but if you do not bring something to the table, it is not going to work. And getting it to work is you have to say, I want to do better. I need to stop this. And we do a lot of things by habit. Yes, there are addictions. When it's an addiction, it's even harder to stop. But for things like cursing or using racial slurs, people should be able to overcome that, or using terms that are offensive. People should be able to overcome the use of those terms with just a minimal amount of concentration and say, look.
Listen, we're going to, a minimum amount,
just try.
We are going to dedicate the next podcast to you. It's going to have 30% less cuss words.
30% less curse words.
Right, Rachel, like when you give the example you gave, the minute you said that, I said to myself 8 or 10 times, do not use that word, do not use that word. And I may have used that word after you said it I may have used that word one time, but I think I caught myself when I did it because I did not want to be considered a racist, or I did not want to disparage anyone. So I made a concentrated effort, and it wasn't that hard.
Hmm. Well, now, you're not the only one. Some other people have said that Van curses a lot on the podcast as well.
I have wanted to invite my friends to listen to the podcast, but I can't because you love the F word. Now, I grew up, my father cussed every day.
Right.
I mean, that was just a part of him. Mm-hmm. But we didn't. We couldn't. We were not allowed to. Mm-hmm. So I understand it. Mm-hmm. But you're very intelligent. Very intelligent. I love listening to your arguments, your debates, but
it's a little jarring. Now, can I do something else? Is there any possible way that I can blame somebody else? Because I was raised in, I know they say that kids in this generation, they like to blame other people. But the reality is that it's seeming you guys are so upstanding now. Look how much I'm standing up straighter. It seems like I was raised, if I could just be honest, it seems like I was raised by a bunch of heathens. That's what it seems like.
No, because
heard those words all the time, and sometimes they seem like they were being loving towards me. Okay. Like, get over here, little F word. You know, like,
my dad cussed every day. Mm. And he would, he would use the harsh words. But right. We couldn't.
Okay. Okay, so I'm not able to blame my father for it. So I'll take responsibility.
because here's what you have to do. Okay, as I stated before, we raised all of our daughters to be independent. I want all of them to be successful. And once they get on their own, they have to chart their own course. And that's the way it is with you, with cussing. And I would say this, on with anything. Look at the good in a person. Pull the good. Use that to advance yourself. Those things that are negative or harmful or take you nowhere, gradually shed them or get rid of them. That's what I would say.
That is some of the best advice that I think anyone could get from anywhere. Listen, I can't promise to be perfect, but what I can promise, what I can promise is that I'm going to make the effort. The 30% challenge starts now. And I'm being serious about this. By the way, I've said this before. I had a cousin of mine, didn't work out for him. He got 32 years. A cousin of mine was before a judge, and the way the judge was controlling the courtroom and the proceedings, I looked at my other cousin, and I was like, judges are born. I don't think that they're made. Someone with that type of judges are born. Now, this judge ended up, I was admiring this guy, then he sent my cousin away forever. But I am terrified of you, Judge Lindsay, honestly.
Oh, I can tell you had a full glass of water when we started.
And I've drank the water. Like, I'm being serious, is that you've actually gotten through to me. And the points were made in a very real way. And I will try my best to cut down on the cursing on the podcast.
But let me show you something, how well you have done. You have not said a single cuss word in these 30 minutes. That's right. So I know you have the power to do it.
Yes.
Wait till y'all get off. Okay. He's going to make up for that 70%.
Put it like this. You have the ability to do it. The question is whether you have the will to do it.
Oh, wow.
You have the ability. That's been demonstrated here. And like I said now, you don't have to stop at 30% now.
Right.
I love this. Van, next time you get at me, I'm going to bring my dad back, send him the Zoom link to come on here. You can come out of the corner now, though. I feel like they've been talking to you.
No, I'm good. No. No, I needed this. I needed this. Because here's the thing. A lot of people, they're too proud to let one of the OGs check them and put them back on their square. I'm not.
The OGs.
I'm here to be corrected. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, that's good. You know what I tell a lot of people? The biggest impediment to success is the inability to accept constructive criticism.
I have learned a lot. I feel like a better human being from having met the Lindsays today. I really do. We appreciate you guys taking some time out of you have like a whole lost study right there. Look at that. Like, that's a whole thing.
It's a chambers.
It's a chambers. Chambers. That's fantastic. I've never been in chambers before. This is, kind of a treat.
Do you understand now why I'm a Cosby kid?
I do.
You get it. He calls me a Cosby kid.
I do. Rachel is, we talked about Rachel being a Cosby kid, and we just finished talking to my mother, who's an African spiritualist. So there's a dichotomy here that works. And that's why the chemistry is so good. But I really do appreciate you guys talking with us today.
Yes.
I learned so much. Thank you so much.
This was a big deal.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
When Rachel told me she was going to be working with you, I said, well, I like him, because I'll never forget on TMZ, Rachel's name came up with the Bachelorette or something. And I don't, the others were being critical, or they didn't know exactly what she was doing, but you were very complimentary. I can't remember the exact detail, but I thank you for that.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I received that. I think I do remember what you were talking about. What ended up happening in TMZ, it's interesting what Judge Lindsay was talking about earlier, is let's say you're in that crowd of 1,000 people, right? If you're in that crowd of 1,000 people, he's talking about you talk to 1,000 people, they're white, talk to 1,000 people, they're black, and you're the only black guy. After a while, what you start to do is you start to recognize inside of people sort of the inherent biases that they bring to things when they're not even trying. Because see, when someone's trying to be a certain way, it's almost childlike. You can parse through intentional racism and look through it, and it becomes comical after a while, like you really feel that way. But when someone's not trying to be that, when that's just inside of them, it's insidious because you can't talk them out of it. And so when you have 6 bachelorettes that you guys have glowing reviews for, and then you have 1 bachelorette and you have all of these problems, I'm trying to get you to understand that there's something behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that. And I'm here with you every day. I wouldn't make a snap judgment on you, right? But I'm here with you every day. So I have enough of a case study to know how you look at things. And so in that particular instance, I was like, you guys don't see that there's a reason why you're picking her apart? And it's even if they can come back and say that there's not, then it's worth the conversation. No hurt feelings. But most of the time, the first thing you get is anger. And then the second thing you get is the come to Jesus moment where they're like, you know, see, I almost cursed. I was going to say the D word, but I didn't. I stopped myself. But you know, and I think that's what was going on. But I'll tell you what I didn't know was that the best thing to do would have been to get Rachel on the face or a Skype or let her talk to the people, because she can handle herself way better than anybody else to take over her. She got that on lock. She don't need no help from nobody when it comes to breaking somebody down.
Very true. You remember that.
Okay.
You guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Right. Thanks again, Van.
No problem.
All right.
No problem. Pleasure to meet the both of you.
All right. Take care.
Bye, Rachel. Guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.